this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably. In brackets.
After Ian liked the film so much last week, we thought we'd do another one of my recommendations.
Well, was this one of your recommendations?
Well, I guess it's kind of a double recommendation.
Yeah, it's a film neither of us have seen before.
No, I have seen it before.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's why I said it was my recommendation.
Oh, right, okay. I was under the impression you hadn't seen it before.
No, I've seen it.
Okay, when did you see it then?
Oh, 8 years ago.
Right, okay. Well, the film in question is Chinatown.
Yeah.
The 1974 classic.
Classic.
Detective neo-noir classic. Yeah. And we'll talk about neo-noir stuff later.
Neo-noir.
Starring Jack Nicholson. Did I already say that? May have done. No? Okay. Starring Jack Nicholson and directed by Roman Polanski. I was so under the impression neither had seen Chinatown.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We probably should have talked to this before we started doing it.
Well, that just proves to the viewers, and I know they're not viewers.
Viewers?
Yeah, that's just a total, you know, I did that completely by accident. I'm listening to another podcast at the moment called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. It's very amusing. And they have a running joke where they say, the viewers at home, and I know they're not viewers. But I did that
so
without...
No,
I genuinely didn't mean to do that. I meant to say listeners, and I then said viewers. And then the only way I could get out of that was to make that joke.
Oh,
so I've credited it now, and you can now all go out and download Mike and Tom Eat Snacks.
Maybe they'll listen to our podcast.
No, it's very unlikely. So the listeners at home now know that we don't discuss... we don't have planned at all. As well, to be honest, they probably knew that anyway.
Yeah,
just listening to the
fair,
podcast,
yeah.
It's quite.
I don't think it's a great
painfully
secret.
Clear that we don't do any preparation beyond watching the film, and even then, that we often leave that to the last moment.
Anyway, so this was actually a recommendation. I think was it Jason recommended this?
Yes, Jason, yeah. Our friend Jason. It's one of his favourite films.
Yeah.
He's always talked about it. When I mentioned that we might. Want to do that for the blog, I think the very next time I saw him, he handed it to me, so keen was he that I watch it and talk about it, and I understand why, because it is, I think it's an amazing film, I think it's fantastic.
Well, I think it's bloody awful.
Really?
Absolutely terrible.
I really hope that's true.
I just couldn't wait for it to finish.
After the debacle of Black Cat, White Cat, you're so keen to get your
revenge. Was it just being ironic? Dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. I can't believe you even liked it.
I wasn't being ironic about Black Cat, White Cat. irony was certainly in short supply in Black Cat, White Cat. Anyway, that's enough of Black Cat, White Cat, because I want to talk about Chinatown. I purposely kept a lot of the detail, a lot of the plot, kind of really, not just what the film was about, but kind of, I suppose... the genre of, I knew it was a detective film or a mystery film or a hard-boiled thriller, but beyond that I didn't really know anything about it, and I kind of tried to keep that. Once I decided I was going to watch it, I tried to keep that lack of knowledge. I didn't want to really hear about any of the twists or the turns.
Not much of it happens in Chinatown either, does it?
Well, that's that is really interesting, actually, the fact that it literally the last part happens in Chinatown.
There's one scene.
Yeah, I like that though. I like that it's more the Jack Nicholson plays a detective.
Jake Gittes,
and he a private eye, I should say, and like all private eyes, he was once a policeman. And they always private eyes are always ex policemen in films. It seems to be just kicked off the force or left the force because he wasn't going to be corrupt or something like that. You're never really quite clear, and. When he was a policeman, he used to work in Chinatown. And there's a great line where they said, what did you used to do in Chinatown? And just as little as possible.
Yeah.
I'm reading up, apparently, in Chinatown, the police couldn't work out who were the criminals, who weren't the criminals, were their actions actually having a negative impact by capturing one criminal, perhaps actually would, in a funny way, free up and allow even more criminals to do something. Yeah, so they ended up trying to get to stay as... uninvolved as possible in Chinatown. So, and it's a good reflection of the film because really, it's all about him getting involved in something he doesn't really need to.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact,
by getting involved, he kind of almost destroys himself.
And he just makes it all worse.
Yeah, and he does. Yeah, he does actually make it all worse. So I suppose it's very clever. So it's set in 1937 LA, and the basic plot is the Jenkins is approached by a woman.
Who
believes her husband is cheating on her. So he pays him to go off and get photos of them. In flagrante, is that?
In flagrante.
In flagrante. Is that the correct pronunciation of that?
Right, yes.
Thank you. The lady's husband is called Hollis Mulray, and he's an engineer and a designer who's potentially has been asked to design a dam for Los Angeles to create a reservoir system for Los Angeles. And it's Jake investigates the case, and we start to find out that the case isn't quite what it appears, and there's some shady dealings going on amongst local businessmen and local government.
It's interesting because, as you said, the only reason he really keeps pursuing it is a desire to see justice.
Yeah.
Because quite quickly, kind of, or the financial motives quickly fall away, I think.
Yeah, well, if anything, it's the opposite. You know, he was offered one of the characters at one point in the film a huge amount of money to more or less drop that case and concentrate on another aspect of it, but he ignores that. And eventually, Jake meets up with the femme fatale, I guess, of the film, Faye Dunaway, who plays Evelyn.
That's a lovely Faye Dunaway.
Yes.
She's lovely, isn't she?
She is in this, yeah, definitely.
She's
lovely.
She kind of lost it a bit later on.
Well, we all do, Lewis. Yeah, but yeah, definitely in this.
She had wonderful drawn-on eyebrows.
Yes. Again, that's, I think, Rome Polanski's mum used to do that, and that's why he got her to do that.
Really?
Yeah, he obviously, his mum would have been of that kind of similar age. Yeah, would have been the same age, so, 1937. So he really wanted, he thought that was a kind of nice little reference. And
interesting.
He always thought of his mum as a striking woman. A bit weird, but then again, Roman Polanski's a bit weird.
Well, he's had a very tough life.
Yeah, well, yes. Yes, we won't go into that. No, that's not a laugh at the horrific situation. More of a laugh of nervousness.
Well, nervousness. Where do you even begin with Roman Polanski's life? Anyway, let's just skirt over that.
Not the subject either of the big incidents of his life. Not really the subject of a light-hearted podcast.
When he was escaping the Nazis as a 7-year-old.
Yes. Yeah. that's unbelievable.
Crazy, isn't it?
It's interesting, this film, because I mean, I suppose if I had any kind of presumptions about it before watching it, was that I kind of presumed it would be a real kind of like, darkest night noir film, lots of shadows.
Yeah.
And it has the feel of a kind of typical kind of detective noir film, but so much of it is filmed during the day. In fact, there are very few sequences set at night.
Yep.
Quite a few sequences set early in the morning.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that really struck me is it's weird. It's almost like a combination of a Western and to me, it had a feel of a Western almost, like it's depicting LA as almost like a frontier town still.
Yeah.
That is still kind of building the infrastructure around it. Because, the whole plot, it turns out that it's actually some people who are trying
You shouldn't say the...
Do you think?
No, I don't think you should reveal it. Just say, there's a conspiracy.
A conspiracy. We're going to mention the last part there. How can we not talk about it without ruining
it? Okay, we'll say there's a spoiler coming up. We're going to talk about it.
Well, we've had this discussion in every single podcast about whether we do spoilers or not. Anyway... It's that kind of sense, because it's really hot, and there's that really interesting sequence where Jack Nicholson's character, Jake, goes down into where the reservoirs are and the channels are, and it's just the desert. Mm. And you're like, behind him, you've got like a road bridge, but then you turn the other way, and that kind of sort of Mexican boy or kind of comes by on a horse, bareback horse.
Yeah.
And it's got a real kind of... And you see just the desert lying beyond LA. And it's got a real sense of, a Western. To me, it did, anyway.
Yeah, no.
And, a good man, and everyone around him is corrupt and doing his best, outside the law.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very much that. I agree. It's quite a striking image, just kind of seeing LA. You forget that LA is just in the middle of the desert.
Really. Yeah, definitely.
And the only thing that's actually keeping it going is this kind of precious water that's come from the mountains.
I mean, it's amazingly shot.
Mm.
The direction is incredible. And I think it had, to me as well, a real documentary feel. The way the camera kind of often moved behind people's shoulders, so it was like you were peeking over a character's shoulders.
Yeah.
Often many of the shots were kind of just, the camera wouldn't, there weren't many cuts between shots. The camera moved and followed characters. They moved through rooms and looked over things. And yeah, it had a real, as I say, kind of documentary or kind of very realistic feel to it all the way through. And the very last sequence, it's just quite chaotic what's happened. It's not really clear.
It's very interesting. Yeah, that last bit is where Jake really just loses control of the situation completely. Yeah. And it's kind of reflected in the way that the camera starts getting jumpier and there's much faster pans and you don't really know what's going on. You don't know as much as what's going on as Jake does. You're just kind of frantically looking around trying to see what's happening.
I think the idea was that it was supposed to be from Jake's perspective. So originally it was going to be a voiceover.
Oh, okay.
With Jake talking about it, I think, almost in the past tense, him recounting the story.
Yeah.
And they did that, but then they took that voiceover off and instead just allowed the you to kind of find out as much, only knew as much as Jake did at any one time. And it's all told from his perspective. You're not privy to any information that he's not privy to. There's no kind of like cut scene where you see something that he hasn't. And you're like, oh, wait till he finds that out. You only ever see what he sees.
Yeah.
So you piece the mystery together as much as him.
What's Faye Dunaway hiding? Or Ellis Mulray?
Well, because you're never quite sure who to trust. All the way through.
It's very clever. Right up to the end, you could be any character, you just don't really know what's happened.
Yeah, and I think Jack Nicholson is awesome in this.
Oh yeah, he's really good. Really
incredible.
Good.
Just has very realistic. He's not a hero, really. He's just an ordinary guy. Yeah.
He's got this fantastic world-weary delivery, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's this definite kind of passion.
And sharpness to him as well. He's, I love all the little detective tricks.
Oh, the stopwatch.
The stopwatch is great. Yeah, too. When Jake's following a character, he sort of parks up, the guy parks up his car and sort of Jake's watching. So what he does, he puts some cheap stopwatches, puts a stopwatch on, sets it off under the wheel of the car, so when the car goes off, it will crush the watch and stop it at the time that he leaves.
Very clever.
A clever idea. Yeah. And then when he, a little bit later, where he's wants to follow Faye Dunaway's car, so he kicks out the one light that's out, so he can follow her from a distance.
Yeah, it's very clever.
Yeah, but and that's, it's that kind of, I think in my notes I wrote something like, God, to be a detective you just have to have balls of steel. Yeah, it's just the fact he's just lying straight away on his feet, using the truth when he needs to use the truth, and then very quickly using a lie when he needs to use a lie.
I think one of my favourite scenes is the bit where he goes to the offices of Water and Power for the second time, and the secretary refuses to let him in to see the new head of Water and Power, and there's a fantastic scene where he says, he could be all day. He's like, I take a very long lunch break.
And just by irritating her, forcing her to go, so she will go in to see her boss and go, look, you've got to deal with it. I can't have him there the whole time. He's driving me nuts. Yeah, really clever.
That's very good.
The other thing I really like is that all the fights are just farcical. They're really realistic fights. There's just like men just... the closest he gets to a kind of Hollywood clever fight is where he fights one of the henchmen outside the old people's home.
Oh, yeah, when he pulls his jacket over his head.
Yeah, but even that's really kind of like scrabbly. It's like a playground fight where they're kind of like not really properly connecting punches and they're kind of flapping around.
Yeah, and he's still hitting him loads of times and he's still not going down.
Yeah, because he's not quite, it's not, yeah, and or the when Jake visits the farm and he goes over and he ends up getting into a fight with some farm hands and again that's just really like one of them has like some is on crutches and it's kind of hitting him with his crutch. It's so stupid in a way, but that is a really realistic, I feel, depiction of what fights are like. They're not people being with witty remarks and being coolly taking someone down. They are
one
just
hit on the jaw and they're on the floor, that kind of thing, it's all
And I'm not sure, it's dangerous to say, or you wouldn't see that in a film nowadays, but Jack Nicholson's character about a quarter into the film gets his nose sliced by a henchman played by Roman Polanski in a little cameo, and then he spends a big chunk of the film with a massive bandage on his nose.
Yes, I thought that's such a brave move. That is such a brave move. You wouldn't get that.
No, I don't think you would. I think a lot of studios would be like, hey, come on, he's the main star, he's just got this enormous bandage on his nose.
Yeah. That's a brilliant move. That's what I always remember this film about.
Yeah.
But the first time I ever saw it, that was the image that stayed with me. The fact that he had the bandage on his nose for pretty much the whole film.
And he has his first kind of kiss with Faye Dunaway's character when she sort of take the bandage off and trying to treat it with some white spirit or something, and then they end up kissing. And the whole way through that, as they kiss her, it's just like, I'm so expecting her to come back and there would just be a streak of blood on her nose where she's kind of touched his nose with a big cut on it.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. And it wasn't just me.
I read a funny little bit of trivia. They got... apparently, it was quite a complex shot to do, Roman Polanski cutting the nose. They had a very complicated false knife.
Very realistic.
And they got tired of so many people asking them how they did it, and it used to take them forever to explain. So they just started telling people that he actually did cut Jack Nicholson's nose on purpose. But it's such a little thing. He basically gets a knife and just sort of puts it slightly in the nostril and then sort of brings it out. So cutting, sort of slicing part of the nostril. And it looks really nasty.
Looks horrible,
and it looks really painful. Yeah. And it's such a small little thing, but...
Yeah, it has a real impact.
Yeah.
And I love Roman Polanski's little horrible villain. He's just such a little weaselly, horrible, kind of jumped up kind of character. I really like it. It's
Speaking of great characters, Noah Cross, played by Lewis... John Huston. John Huston is classic kind of... Well, I think we checked on his IMDb page and he started acting in 1929. Yeah, he's a little stalwart of the screen. He plays it really well. Jack Nicholson was going out with Angelica Huston, his daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they said it was actually quite awkward because there is that bit where Noah Cross asks Jake, "Are you sleeping with my daughter?"
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and they said they found that very awkward to record.
Right. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jack's quite the ladies' man.
He is quite the ladies' man. Quite the ladies' man.
I mean, what would you say for our generation or for us when you think of Jack Nicholson? What's the first thing you think of?
Dirty old man.
Okay. In terms of the characters he plays.
Oh right. Okay. Probably the Joker.
Totally. Yeah. That's the first thing I think of. When I put this on...
Lovable, dirty old Joker.
Well, I watched this the other night, and I watched it with my flatmate Paul, and as soon as he appeared on, he was, who's in this again? I was like, Jack Nicholson. And he sort of nodded, and he just said, straight away, he just said a line from Batman. And then I followed up with, where does he get those wonderful ties? And he's had an enormous career, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, he's been in some brilliant films.
He has. It's
really good. I guess this was one of the films that really set him off. It's Easy Rider, I think, was one of his...
It kind of moved him into, the big leagues, I guess. Yeah. It really kind of... but he'd been around for years and years. He was known around on that circuit. He is actually really... pointing at it for Lewis, but that doesn't really help for you. That you're at home. I've got a great book by Jonathan Ross on obscure. It's
The Incredibly Strange
Film Book, an alternative history of cinema.
Yeah.
And it's a cracking read, actually. Really, really good. Just covers kind of various things on exploitation films, black exploitation films, and 3D films, and science fiction films. But he's got a whole chapter on Jack Nicholson, and he does it from a point of Jack Nicholson, the forgotten star, because Jack Nicholson appeared in a huge amount of films as a young guy.
Oh, right.
And sort of suggests, at the end, says something like, I wonder what Jack Nicholson does now after appearing in so many films. You know, between in the late 60s, appeared in like 30 films. Yeah, and but yeah, he yeah he's a worker. God, he's a worker. Yeah, he's been so many films, and it's certain. I would say out of all the films I've seen Jack Nicholson in, and I've seen a fair few, I think this is his best performance. Mm.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't think of him as Jack Nicholson in it. That's for sure. Which
yeah, you totally believe in the character.
Yeah, yeah. I think Jack Nicholson is one of those such an iconic and big actor that often you kind of just think, oh, it's Jack Nicholson, and you don't think.
Yeah, I reckon it's probably between this and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I think.
Yeah, that's right. I've not seen One Flew. I've read.
What?
I've read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but I've not seen it.
Oh well, that's.
But because.
I warn you, it hasn't got a good ending.
No, well, the book didn't either. And I think it's weird because I had to think for a second because I think knowing that Jack Nicholson played that character the whole way through, I just thought of Jack Nicholson. So for a second, I was like, and I've seen obviously clips of it, so for a second, I was like, have I seen it? No, I have read the book though. But
it's good. It's interesting because they're two very, very different characters, but he plays them both excellently well.
Mm.
And I think, it's got me to be between those, but certainly Chinatown. Fantastic film and really, really great acting. Yeah. We should stop talking about Jack Nicholson and talk about Faye Dunaway for a
yes, bit. We should actually.
Because I think she was really, really good in this film.
Yeah.
She's not actually, when I look back through her filmography, because you know, obviously I think of her from Bonnie and Clyde, kind of mostly.
Mm.
She's not actually been in that many kind of films that I really recognise or have seen.
No.
So I don't really know, but this one and Bonnie and Clyde, she was absolutely fantastic in.
Mm.
I mean, she just played it so well all the way through. Just she came across as such a kind of complex character that she did a. You knew she was hiding something, but you weren't quite sure what. You know, she appeared different in each scene.
Yeah,
it was really, really interesting.
Yeah, and yeah, as you say, you felt that she was definitely hiding something. So you spent the whole film Jake can't quite trust her.
Mm.
You can't quite trust her. You're never really sure if you're on her side or not.
Yeah.
And
you're constantly kind of scrutinising her for any kind of clue. And she does this fantastic kind of... She never really gives anything away, but there's a kind of slight movement of the eye or the arm or something. You know that there's something there.
Yeah.
It's really, really...
Yeah, a sense of her being really controlled, but it being really brittle. In the sense that any second she would just completely fall apart.
Yeah.
Actually, the only bit that was slightly over the top for me, slightly melodramatic.
Yeah.
Where he's kind of slapping her.
Yeah.
And he's like, who is she? He's like, my sister. Slaps her. Who is she? My daughter. Slaps her again. Who is she? My sister. My daughter. My sister. My daughter. And I was like, that's the only bit I felt didn't really work. But you know what? In real life, when really high emotional things happen, if you stepped away and looked at it, they are often very over the top and melodramatic. You kind of forget in real life things like that are ridiculously over the top and crazy, and people are shouting and screaming. Referencing the when we talked about earlier how people kept thinking that they had really cut Jack Nicholson's nose, he did actually slap Faye Dunaway. They tried to do that scene several times with him not doing a pretend slap, and it just wasn't working, so she said, oh, just slap me. So he slaps her a couple of times.
It's quite a brutal scene.
It is, yeah.
I mean, like you say, it is a bit overdramatic. In fact, I think both of us let out a little bit of a giggle when when it happens. For like,
yeah,
it is slightly comical in an awful way.
Yeah, because it is just so over the top. Yeah. And I mean, it comes as kind of like quite the rest of the film is so controlled in many ways, and lots of characters not really saying what they think or saying what they believe. And then there's this moment where they're suddenly like,
I think it was more the comedy of the fact that he slaps her one way and she says, my sister, and he slaps her the other way.
Makes you think of Aeroplane.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, one way, hit her one way, she says, my sister. Hit her the other way, she says, my daughter.
Yeah, it's, yeah, definitely.
Maybe if he hit her at the same time on both sides.
Yeah, that does. That's very true, actually. Yeah.
Anyway, that's just what crossed my mind.
I agree. Yeah, it's a funny little thing, that. We've already mentioned that, despite the fact it's called Chinatown, it's not really set in Chinatown itself.
Chinatown.
Also, the film doesn't really have many Chinese-American actors in it. A couple of extras. But it has got one major Chinese-American actor, Faye Dunaway's butler, played by the great James Hong.
Khan.
Yes.
James Hong.
James Hong. He was the bad guy in Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, I knew I recognised him.
He's been
him
in loads
somewhere.
Of things. He is. He's quite a famous Chinese American actor. Right. He's been in lots and lots of films.
Yeah, I recognised him.
Yeah. What else has he been? He's been. Oh, I looked on his. His database biography, it's insane the amount of films he's been in, a huge number. But yeah, he's but that's the first thing I when I saw it, it's the guy from Big Trouble in China. Which is a great film.
Yeah, it's a good
great
one.
Film.
Snake Plissken,
that's Escape from New York.
It's the same character though, isn't it?
No, it's not at all. No, he played he plays like a complete idiot, really. Yeah. You know? That's the great thing. It's an action film where the action hero is just an idiot. It's kind of like a, yeah.
Some cracking dialogue in the film as well. I mean, we mentioned the last line and the line before it as well, which he says. I had to rewind it to actually rewind it. Get the old video. High speed rewind.
Did you rewind it before handing back to your video shop?
Don't know.
Yeah, fine.
No, no. I forgot what I was going to say now. Yeah, the line is just before he says forget about. They say forget about Jake. Jake's last line is as little as possible.
Yeah.
As a reference to the fact that that's what they did in China.
So, shall we do the trivia quiz?
Let's do the trivia quiz.
Trivia quiz time.
Is that our jingle now?
Yeah.
Trivia.
Yeah, it's always a lovely jingle. Just like trivia.
Oh my god!
Right. So Lewis, you forgot, didn't you? So you while I was making your dinner, you were hurriedly writing trivia questions.
That's the way I like to write my trivia.
That's the way you roll.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
I think I've got some hard ones, actually.
What?
I didn't mean to.
Screw you!
I didn't mean to, but I. You may surprise me. You may be able to get them. I mean, one is actually genuinely quite unfair. So.
Or like your other one, did you like this film?
Well, that's an easy one. You said yes. And I was like, okay, that's 1 point. That was a very easy film.
That was the easiest question
I ever. So okay. Now I've got insanely hard ones. So
name a duck.
What number am I thinking? Okay, what connects the video game Command & Conquer Red Alert 3 with Chinatown?
What? Red Alert 3?
Yes. This is really unfair.
Is unfair. Red Alert 3. Well, it's got full motion video in it, so there must be some sort of actor that's in the same films. Oh, okay, who's in it?
The only way you'd know this is if you perhaps had seen it on the Wikipedia page that I saw. So.
Well, I haven't seen it, but let me guess. Is it something to do with Tim Curry?
No, it's not. If you'd said another thing, I would have perhaps given you half a point, but because you completely got it wrong, no, it's not.
Okay.
I wish it said, no, you've not got it, but oh well. Okay, question two. The last line is paraphrased in an episode of Flight of the Conchords in the second season. What is the paraphrased line from that episode?
Forget about it, Brett. Is it Brett? No, Jermaine. It's New Zealand town. That's it.
Okay.
Forget about it, Jermaine. It's New Zealand town.
Okay.
That's it.
Now, two sequels were actually planned. Is this Chinatown was originally going to be part of a trilogy?
Man, you've been raping the Wikipedia page.
And two sequels were planned. One eventually was made, called Two Jakes, which was made in 1990.
Yeah.
The third one.
Yeah.
Now this is so. To be honest, I thought this before I actually saw this bit of quiz. This bit of trivia.
Yeah.
So there's a slim chance you might go thought the same thing. The plot of the third one, and I'll give you a clue.
Yeah.
Each film was going to be based around infrastructure being built in LA.
Okay.
And the third film was going to be based on say the plot was it was never used. Obviously it was never made, but this plot and that idea came up in another film.
Oh.
And it's slightly unusual. I'll get there. It's a film you go, but it genuinely when I was watching it, I did think of this film. So do you know what have any idea what that film might be?
Oh my god.
So set around LA getting new infrastructure. I mean, there's loads of those, isn't there? I mean, it's a subgenre. Everyone loves a big LA infrastructure film.
See, all I can think of is the film Volcano, where a volcano erupts in Los Angeles.
Yes, that was going to be the third film. Jake was going to be
the new infrastructure. It's a conspiracy to bring a volcano into Los Angeles. Have you ever seen Volcano? I've seen bits of it. It's comically
Tommy
bad.
Lee Jones.
Tommy
isn't
Lee
it?
Jones, yeah.
Yes, I have seen it.
It is comically bad. It is actually quite worth watching just because it is quite funny.
Yeah, well, there's quite a few of those LA. And it's, yeah. You know, it's also Earthquake, that was set in LA
as well.
I'll give you a clue. It's not Battle for LA or whatever that Aliens Invading LA film was called.
But it is to do with infrastructure in LA.
Yes.
Okay.
The plot hinges on. And I'll give you another clue. It's a detective story. You'll kick yourself when I tell you. Well, you probably won't. You'll be like, what? You'll probably say that instead.
Is it to do with a Hollywood sign? No. No, I can't think.
All right. Okay. Well, should I give you the right answers or do you
No,
want...
let me do mine first. Okay. Let me do mine. I think yours were quite hard this week.
They were, I think, yeah.
All right, this is an easy one. What Oscar did the film win? It won one Oscar, got loads of nominations, but what did it win?
See, you always go for... I always go for really things that aren't really part of the film, and you always ask the questions about the actual film, which I never know. Is it best screenplay? I say best screenplay.
Okay. How many times does Jake slap Evelyn?
Oh, God.
My sister, my daughter, my sister.
Nine.
Okay. And Robert Towne wrote the screenplay for four Tom Cruise movies. Robert Towne was the screenwriter for this film, by the way. He wrote the screenplay for four Tom Cruise movies. Name one of them.
Well, we know it's not Top Gun. I just want to say Risky Business for some reason. No, I'm not going to say Risky Business. I shall say...
shall I give you a hint?
Yes, okay.
They all came out in the early 90s, I think. Or around the early 90s.
Cocktail. I'll say Cocktail.
Okay.
All right.
You want to give me your answers?
Okay, so the connection between Command & Conquer Red Alert 3 and Chinatown is... James Hong, the butler we mentioned. His daughter is in plays one of the characters for the Imperial Japan. If you'd said like, oh, is it? I'd have given you half a point if you'd said something about the Imperial Japan faction in
Imperial Japan faction three,
or the Empire of the Sun, I should say, because they don't actually refer to it as Japan, even though it is. but yeah, so his daughter plays is in that.
Right.
The second, I don't think it's Jermaine Brett. I will give you a point anyway, because these are hard, but yeah. It is, I think it's something like, forget about, because I think it's actually Murray and the Prime Minister, and he says, forget about it, Murray, or forget about it, Prime Minister, it's New Zealand town. But yeah, I'll give you a point for that.
Did you always wonder where that came from?
No, I knew that's why it was Chinatown. The two sequels are planned, it was actually planned as a trilogy. The second one was Two Jakes. The third had a plot line which obviously they revived, but was used in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where in Who Framed Roger Rabbit they were trying to knock down the Looney Town, the cartoon town, to build a freeway for it. And the third one was all going to be about building freeway. And the whole way through, when I watched that, the first thing I did actually think of was that, oh, it has a really, in a strange way, a similar feel to Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because it's got a detective who was a policeman and isn't anymore, a femme fatale, Jessica Rabbit, who gets...
Who's lovelier, Jessica Rabbit or Faye Dunaway?
Jessica Rabbit. and also, I thought, I don't know if it's done with that, but Catherine Turner sounds a little bit like Faye Dunaway. But they've got a similar tone of voice.
Who does the voice for Jessica Rabbit?
It's Kathleen Turner.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
And they have a very similar tone of voice, I think, Kathleen Turner and Faye Dunaway. Certainly in this film. Oh, anyway.
Yeah, no, they do.
It's
I suspect probably based on Faye Dunaway's
performance. Quite possible, yeah. And, you know, Jessica Rabbit gets him involved in this, and under false pretense, Bob Hoskins under false pretenses.
Forget about it, Roger. It's a Toontown.
It's Toontown. But, yeah, and then when I read that, I was like, yes! Vindicated. So, yeah, those were very hard. So that's 1 point for Lewis.
1 point. Oh, dear. That's not so good. We haven't got the running scores.
No, I haven't. Oh. I've got to.
We'll keep meaning to do that every time we do this. we'll get it up.
Yeah.
Okay. So what were my questions? Okay, so what Oscar did it win? What did
I said best screenplay.
And you're correct.
Yes. Yeah. Yes!
how many times does Jake slap Evelyn? You said 9.
Yeah.
That's tantamount to assault, I think.
It was quite a lot.
It was
wasn't
quite.
It,
it was yes. quite. Well, actually, it was only 5.
Really?
It
okay.
seemed like more.
Yeah,
but
it seemed
yes.
like more. Okay. I think it's because he threw against the
he
wall.
He did. Yeah. It was 5 slaps and then a wrestle to the ground.
Your Honour.
Robert Town wrote the screenplay for 4 Tom Cruise movies. Name one of them. You
said Cocktail.
You said Cocktail. Or actually, he wrote Days of Thunder.
I was going to say the racing car one, but I knew I couldn't remember the name. I was like, you won't accept the racing car one.
I'm going to have to hurry. Days of Thunder, I can't even say it. The firm.
The T-H-R-I-N.
Yeah. The Firm and Mission Impossible 1 and 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a little disappointing.
To be honest, yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, so it was 1 out of 3 for you as well.
Oh,
it was a low-scoring week.
It was, yeah. Oh well, at least we. Yeah, I think you. I think you're ahead though.
No, I think we were level after last time. All right. Well, maybe I don't know. Hmm. It's close anyway.
It is close. Yes. Right. Well, I'm gonna quickly look through my notes if there's anything I missed.
I tell you one thing that I wanted to talk about.
See, there it is.
What's that? Roger Rabbit,
and I'm changing. It's changing. Double cross by the higher. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that leaps to mind. And Big Trouble in China. I mentioned that. It's like, it's the Chinese guy. Big Trouble in China.
So it's a window into your thoughts. I'm just looking at Ian's notes here. They're literally just things Daylight that he thought noir. In his mind. Daylight Noir. He's just writing down random things.
Love the rubbish fight in the garage in the orange grove. Shoshana Femme.
Shoshana Femme.
Now that got a big laugh from me because that's actually you've seen the Rootles, haven't you?
The Ruttles.
The Ruttles. Is it the Rootles or the Ruttles?
It's the Ruttles.
Okay.
It's from there, from Rutland.
Yes, that's right. And I always get it the wrong way around. Because when I always think, oh no, it's not the Ruttles, it's pronounced Rootles. But whenever I think, yeah, I always get that confused. Anyway, there's that great bit right at the end where they're interviewing Mick Jagger.
Oh, yeah.
And they ask, why did he think the Ruttles broke up? And he says, Shoshana Femme. So she says that. Because when they're having that kind of the pillow talk after, she asks him what happened in Chinatown. And she goes, Shoshana Femme. I was like, yay! little detective trick.
So do you think she saw the Ruttles?
And yes, I think so. Yes, I think she did. So I think it's quite clear we would recommend this film to anyone. It was.
The one thing that I was going to talk about that I forgot to completely mention was the fact that it's all on a true story.
Yeah, that's something we should actually.
It's not, it is fictional, but at the same time, it is based on the fact that of a big conspiracy regarding LA's water supply.
Mm.
Have a look at the story because it's quite interesting. I just kind of did a brief bit of reading about it on the internet before we. Before we started this.
So I guess the two Jakes.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the two Jakes.
No, the guy who really kind of always, we mentioned him earlier, Jason, who absolutely loves Chinatown, he has seen it. I do remember him saying, just talking about how strange it is, because it was made, 16 years later, in 1990.
Just after Jack Nicholson had done Batman.
Yes, directed by Jack Nicholson as well.
But also written by Robert Towne, so the same screenwriter.
Yes, yeah. I guess Roman Polanski, he couldn't come to America, could he?
No.
So, he said it's quite strange. He said, I remember Jason saying something about how it has its moments, but, nowhere near as good. I wonder. I'm intrigued to see it because I'm just. Does Jack Nicholson actually play Jake again?
I think so. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because originally it was going to be the. When I was reading, Two Jakes was only going to be set in like 1941, where I forget the second infrastructure thing. It was the second film was based around housing or something, and I think gas. I think it was a power plant, and that's the infrastructure. Hook. I love the all these sort of based on an infrastructure hook. They love it. Obviously, Sim City fans. So. That wouldn't make... You can't play the same guy, 16 years later. You'd have... Jack Nicholson aged quite a bit in those 16 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll be intrigued to see it.
Yeah.
even though I've heard it's not as good, I'll definitely be up
there. Jack Nicholson never played another detective because he really wanted to do the other two films. So he always turned down detective roles.
Really? Yeah. Did you read that on... IMDb.
Yeah, maybe he's done it since he made the Two Jakes, but certainly during that time between 1974 and
1990. Is that why he did Wolf?
Yes, that's why he did Wolf. That's why yes. Yes. That's kind of good in a really weird way. I always think Jack Nicholson would have been, if they'd made an X-Men film in like 1976, he would have been amazing Wolverine.
Oh yeah.
He's short. He's got. He looks a little bit like Wolverine. He would have been brilliant as Wolverine. In the 1970s, Jack Nicholson would have just been the best Wolverine ever.
Yeah, although to be honest, it would have been a bit of a shit film.
I guess it would have been.
I mean, all those early attempts to make superhero films were just
The Superman film in 1980. That's considered the kind of classic of the genre.
Was it 80 or was it? It might have been 70.
79, I think. 79? 80? 79?
Yeah.
I think it was 79.
Yeah, that's definitely the exception. The exception that proves the rule, I think.
Yeah. I guess they would have had to have like mechanical claws popping out of them. They would have had to probably set up. It would have been a physical prop rather than CGI.
Yeah. I think they did use some props, didn't they, in the new film?
Yeah, but I don't think, he probably would have had gloves on. I love the way we're described now, how they would have made Wolverine's claws in a 1976 X-Men film.
It's an important question that our children will thank us for if we find the answer.
Well, they could have done Cyclops' eye beams because they had Superman do his heat vision, didn't they? So they recreated that easily enough.
I suppose they could have done
Wind Machine for Storm.
Yes, they probably wouldn't have put her in.
Yeah. I could have probably done most of them.
Yeah, I don't know.
There was that kind of a few years ago, someone created, pretended that they found some notes from Orson Welles about him doing a Batman film. Okay. And they said, they showed some parody in it. But you can almost imagine an Orson Welles Batman film. But of course,
he did Transformers the movie.
Transformers the movie.
Actually, there's a film that perhaps we should think about putting on, The Third Man. I haven't seen that, or A Touch of Evil.
I've not seen The Third Man. Again, I've read the book, which is weird because the book really was written just to get the film made.
Is it Graham Greene, isn't it?
Yeah, he openly says at the beginning of it, you should watch the film, not read this book. I read it in Vienna.
It's funny,
I went to Vienna, I bought it for like a quid in a second-hand bookshop and then read it going to Vienna.
That's really interesting because one of the few, I think the only book I've ever read where I thought, actually, this was better as a film is Brighton Rock, also by Graham Greene.
Ah.
And I thought all the way through I was reading it, I thought, this works better as a film than a book.
Mm. Well, I've not seen the old or the new Brighton Rock.
Well, no, I hadn't either. I just was reading it and thinking this would be a much better film than it is a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was definitely a film-orientated writer,
wasn't
he? The Shining.
The Shining, yeah. The Shining. I mean, it's an all right book, but...
No, I've not read the book, so I can't comment. Great film, though.
Mm, very good film. I think
another Jack Nicholson one.
Yes, yeah. I know Stephen King was quite unhappy with the film version of The Shining.
I don't know why.
So, yeah, I know. It cuts out loads of stuff from the book, but quite rightly so. I mean, there are bits where, there are, lines in hedges. What's the word? what's that, you know, when you cut a hedge into a certain shape, what's...
Topiary?
Yeah, topiary. So there's topiary lions, and the lions come alive and attack people. Yeah, I know, in a book, you can kind of... But in film, obviously, that would look ludicrous. I think in, like, the 90s, they did a TV movie version of The Shining, which stuck to Stephen King's text. Obviously, it's rubbish.
You've got a trim of... The only thing I would say about the movie version of The Shining is that the actual Shining itself is somewhat downplayed. So I remember the first time I watched The Shining, I was like, by the end of it, I was like, so what's The Shining?
Yeah, that's true, what else? I would say Independence Day, the film, is probably better than Independence Day, the novelization. I've not read it, but I suspect.
That's a topic for another day, that is. Novelizations of films.
Alan Foster, he did loads.
He did loads, didn't he?
All the Aliens, he did... Yeah.
Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I read the Alien and Alien before I... Because my friend, when I was a kid, when he watched Alien or Aliens when he was about 10 and just talked about it constantly. So we kind of became obsessed with it. But my parents would never have let me watch that at sort of 10 years old. Yeah. So
Whereas I watched Alien with my mum when I was 9.
it's a lovely... that's a really weird film to see with your mum as well.
She liked it.
Lots of kind of creepy... Yeah. Fear of... It's why you're so terrified of women's genitalia now.
I remember, actually, Alien 3 was one of the few films that Mum and Dad actually went to see at the cinema. She really, really liked that film. It's funny, isn't it?
It's like my friend Steve, one of his mum's favourite films is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's like such a odd... It's like a weird... We should form a club of odd films mums like. That's serious.
Good old mums.
I mean, I can't think of any. My mum's favourite films are always the ones you'd expect. You know, Gone with the Wind. She loves Gone with the Wind and things like that. I can't think of any really odd films that my mum likes. Yeah. She's not a big fan of the Saw films or or I Spit on Your Grave or anything like that.
Well, you'll understand.
Anyway. So, yes. Chinatown, good.
Yeah, sorry, is that it?
Thumbs up.
No, it's good.
I'm not going
to
do a...
if you've never seen this and you've listened to this whole podcast, you probably know what happens in the whole film.
You'll be pleased to know I'm not going to do a ukulele challenge at the end. Because, I couldn't really think of anything to do. Perhaps we'll just have the sound of running water to finish. No, we won't do that. we'll just finish it. So... Yeah. It's good. Goodbye.
It's
bye from me.
Yeah, goodbye from me as well.
Excellent. Bye.
Bye.